hot water heaters. Solar, continuous flow and storage hot water. Ream is Australia's favourite. Install a Ream.
Welcome to the Sunday Rub. Triple M rocks football.
Oh, straight up the high diddle-diddle. It's got to be a good kick. Lamb, the mark is taken by Ibbotson.
There's got to be free players
short
everywhere.
Short ball, Mainz Camp there takes the mark. Basher Hawley, what was he thinking?
I guess I went away from the team, team rules, and, you know, I don't know what it was, just a blank situation that I saw a player free in the middle, and I just chose to pick it, and I knew as I kicked it was a wrong decision.
Welcome to Etihad Stadium. Yes, last night, some controversy there. Not so much that Fremantle won the game, but how Richmond lost the game there. You heard from Wayne Swass in the finals, closing stages of the game there. It was unreal. And then, of course, Basher Hawley as well. So welcome the Sunday team. Wayne Swass, Wayne Carey and JZJ Clark from the Herald Sun are with us. Jakey King to join us a little bit later on. We look forward to that. Boys and Swatter, you were calling the game there last night. You were there. You were in the last couple of seconds of it. Were you thinking in your mind, as all of the Richmond players congregated to one side of the ground, why is he doing this?
Yeah, well, I didn't realise at the time, BT, because we immediately looked down to... Good afternoon, everybody. Richmond had flooded the northern side of the punt road end. You just thought, 70 seconds to go, Jay-Z, it's a simple decision. Just play the boundary line. Go short, go long, whatever it is. We'll run the clock down. But he just pulled the trigger straight up the middle and that opened up the door. And it's one of those decisions that you sit back and think, you know, if he had it 100 times again, he'd make 100 different decisions.
Did he get sucked into the vortex of the game, Duck?
Oh, probably. It's just it's a bad decision at the wrong time of the game. And if that mistake's made at the start, Swatter, you're not talking about it as much. Dennis Pagan used to always say that you can't just focus on that one. I'm sure there's a number of mistakes in that last quarter.
That's a good point you make, because Martin hit the post three times, Jack Riewoldt kicked it behind, and Trent Cotchin missed everything from 30 metres out in the last quarter.
So they kick those and they win the game. Yeah. So you can focus on that one because it's a last mistake.
That's an out. That's an out. Because when you get down to the last minute of the game, and you've got a decision, and it's a black or white decision as to whether it's right or wrong.
Yes, and you are trained for this.
Yeah, I reckon there are no excuses. I reckon he should have nailed it. It was a decision, for goodness sake.
No, I'll tell you what, it was the execution, BT. The decision is that once you make the decision, you've got to execute it properly.
All of the players had flooded one side of the ground in anticipation.
Well, maybe that's why he decided not to do that. But at the end of the day, you live and die by the sword, and he didn't execute correctly, so they lose the game.
Fellas, it could be really costly for Richmond, and this is where Tiger fans are heartbroken this morning, because it could cost them a top four spot, that one kick. They're currently 4 points outside the eight. If Sydney beat West Coast today, they're 8 points outside a double chance.
And they play Hawthorn next week.
Exactly, which is going to be...
Sorry, you said 4 points outside the top eight.
Top four, sorry, excuse me, at the moment. So it could cost them that double chance.
And they've got a big month coming up as well.
And this is a club who hasn't won a final since 2001.
Damien Hardwick had this to say after the game.
You can look at it one or two ways. You can look at the last mistake. Basher knows from here on in, or you can look at the 10 goals, 18, you hit the post six times. Don't take your opportunities where you had more than ample opportunities to win the game. We didn't.
For me, it was the Dustin Martin kick. He was 30 metres out, I think, with 1 or 2 minutes left in the third quarter, hit the post. That would have put him 2 goals up leading into the last change. They would have had their tails up. And he's a good kick, Dustin Martin. That's the one for me. I mean, we focus on Hawley, but Dustin's got to kick those goals.
Yeah, they did everything right for 92% of the game. They led for 92% of the game, and for 8% BT, they let themselves down.
I know it sounds good when we make excuses for players and say there were plenty of other mistakes made in the game, and I was a player myself, and I used to tell myself that when I made a mistake. And, you know, the coach comes out in support of Basher by saying exactly what Duck just said before. But guess what? Michael Jordan, you know, get the goal. Nails it. They win.
Yeah.
I mean, the big-time players in sport around the world thrive on that opportunity.
But Michael Jordan won a lot of games, but he also lost a lot because he didn't make the final shot. The other thing
50%.
The other thing I'd say, it was the perfect decision, but in a different game sense. That was the perfect decision from Basher Hawley with Richmond 2 points down and 70 seconds to go.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, it's as Duck said, it's live or die by the sword. And you know, refreshingly, Basher's admitted it. What can he do? He can't change it. Guarantee you what will happen next time, though.
What question mark throws up for me is obviously Fremantle's on top of the ladder. They just beat Richmond at the G. Richmond have been going very well, BT.
Richmond beat them over there.
Yeah, they beat them over there. But Richmond have been playing very well all year, really. Where do they sit? I mean, a Fremantle serious chance of winning a flag and or are Richmond?
To me, Fremantle are a serious chance, given the fact that I don't think they're playing anywhere near their
best. No, they're not.
I reckon they've got a lot of improvement and building to do. And I personally think they'll be one of the last four teams standing. Yeah. And I actually think they may be one of the last two teams standing.
Do you think that Freo have another 2 to 4 goals in them?
I think they've got to find that.
If you go in there thinking 12 will beat Hawthorn, you're going to fall short.
Hayden Crozier is the man for me.
Well, not have to play Hawthorn until grand final day.
True.
So don't worry about Hawthorn at this stage. Beat the teams that come to Perth by playing the footy you normally do and playing that ground magnificently. They may not have to play for you. Mm.
You look ahead to Hawthorn,
until they get late into the finals.
It's a Friday night. Absolute blockbuster. Hawks versus the Tigers. The Tigers have had the Hawks measure a little bit. They've beaten them 2 out of the last 3 games. So, you know, coming off a 138-point win, it's hard to judge the Hawks' mentality coming into this game. And Clarkson already put the focus onto that straight after the hiding of Carlton on Friday night. So I'm going to be interesting to see how the Tigers can turn around, can pick themselves up after this loss coming into what is an absolute blockbuster Friday night.
Well, I know they've won the last 2 flags, but I don't think I've seen Hawthorn play as well as they have in the last 3 weeks.
Playing too well too early?
No, at the end of the day, you play the way you play at that particular time. They are certainly at the top of their game right now. Yep. And the pressure from underneath, and we spoke about this on Friday, the pressure from underneath and the way they've rotated their 3 ruckmen.
It can change quickly.
Segler, exactly. But it's just, he knows how to keep players on the edge. Poppy started as the sub, comes on, kicks 3 goals.
So he's got Langford on the boil playing in the VFL. It's on, mate. If you're not absolutely maniac at trying to win the footy, you ain't playing. So imagine how worked up he's going to be when he comes back in.
And you hear from all of the players, and when you hear them interviewed, and I've heard a few over the weekend, and they all talk about that they all feel like they're on edge. Even Luke Hodge was saying, you know what, if we're not at the top of our game, we know that there's a young kid or someone prepared to come in and do exactly what we've been doing. So that keeps even him on edge, which is a great place to be in.
Jay-Z, are you questioning maybe Hawthorn might be a little bit complacent because of the ease of which they performed on Friday?
Well, Alistair Clarkson was in the press conference and he said something very interesting after the game. He said the win over the Blues was not ideal for them. You know, it wasn't a great look for the game, but it also wasn't a great preparation because he knows they've got to go up 4 cogs on Friday night, and they've just had the easiest win over Carlton of all time. Carlton laid 32 tackles on Friday night, which is just an abysmal one. We'll have more tackles than that today in this radio box.
Flicks?
Because of the intensity. Well,
talk about Carlton a little bit later. Mm. But just on Richmond, of their last 6 games remaining, 5 of them against, you know, sides that can still play some pretty good quality football. Probably the exception in amongst all of those teams is Essendon at the MCG. But they've got a tough run, the Tigers.
Who are the remaining 5 games out of that?
They play, as Jay mentioned, Hawthorn. Then they play Adelaide over in Adelaide. Then they play Gold Coast. They're no pushovers. Mm. Collingwood, MCG, probably going to have most of their players back. Then Essendon. And then they play North here at Etihad in the last game of the year.
Maybe that could decide it.
Yep.
The round 23.
I don't know whether you've been watching Fox in recent times, boys, but I saw the Winners rebooted the other night, and of course I happened to kick 8 in the opening of the Winners rebooted, and so what I decided to do was tape it, and because I've got 4 boys and none of them watched it, I've sat them down individually over 4 separate days and given myself 4 viewings of the same thing.
And what was the overriding comment from the boys?
What are we watching this garbage for, Dad? And so they said, that's a half hour of our life, we will not get back. So they're very, very despondent with what was going on there. Hey, listen, the news in regard to Gary Ablett is a little bit confused at the moment. We thought we'd try and clear that up with our own doc, Dr. Rowan White, who I believe is at a conference of some sort. Doc, is it in Melbourne, by the way?
Yes, Brian, we're at St. Vincent's Hospital, going through injuries.
We have, in Australia... Tell me, am I just imagining this, or when you compare it with World Medicos, do we have the best depth of orthopaedic surgeons in the world in Australia, do you think?
No, absolutely right, Brian, and that's because of the need, because, you know, it's what we call the ACL capital of the world. There's more cruciate injuries through sport, particularly netball and football, than anywhere else in the world. So, of course, our home-bred orthopaedic surgeons are the are the world's best. So we're hearing all about it this morning, Brian.
Very nice. We want to hear all about Gary Ablett. And first of all, give us the diagnosis from when you saw it and you heard about it to where it is now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. In fact, just 1 millisecond of an injury last night. That's all we're talking about this morning is Gary Ablett's knee. And look, you know, Rodney Eade's come out and said, look, relatively optimistic, only maybe 2 or 3 weeks with just a cartilage. But looking at the vision and looking at it in slow motion, Brian, I think there might be a little bit more there. You know, Matt Shaw fell across his leg and we saw that medial ligament. We saw his knee bend inwards. So there's no doubt that he's gone and stressed and strained his medial ligament. Now, the real problem with that is that when you get that sort of injury, and particularly when you see Gary, he sort of pivots, you know, the top part of his leg twists on the lower part of his leg, but you're putting your cruciate ligament under a lot of strain as well. So I think we've got to, you know, hold our breath and wait for the scan results, but there may be a little bit more to this than first meets the eye.
So on your trained eye, looking at the vision only and not getting a chance with the patient, of course, you would suggest that it may well be more than just cartilage damage.
I think so, Brian. The mechanism suggests that there could be a medial ligament at least. And look, unfortunately, whenever we stress the medial ligament, there is a chance, sometimes up to 30 to 40%, of an anterior cruciate injury as well. So there's no doubt that those ligaments have been put under strain, and it's only going to be the MRI scan which will give us the final diagnosis, Brian.
Doc, it's Jay Clark here. You'd think that he's out for the season now, given what you know, that they're going to park him. That's his campaign done, isn't it, Gary's?
I reckon, Jay. I think, you know, given the events of the first half of the season and now this, it's probably cumulative. And I think for the sake of getting him back for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, it's probably a chance for him to take stock. But look, again, I think Rodney Eade's estimate, maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks, maybe a little optimistic at this point.
Right, Doc, will you go back and start talking knees with all the knee heads there? And you'll just be talking knees and bones and ligaments for the rest of the day, and you'll be just feasting on it, all you blokes. You'll be saying, how much money can we rip out of these blokes in Australia? Let's get them in here. Even if they don't need surgery, we're going to give them surgery anyway.
It's real crazy in here, Brian.
Doc Rowan White joining us there. Thanks, Doc. Appreciate your time there.
BT, there's nothing to gain by playing Gary again for the rest of the year, is there? You just park him. You get him right for the preseason.
I would have thought so. And it raises the question, I think at age 33 now, is that right, JC? 33, 32, 33. If it were to be an ACL or a significant medial and he's out for 12 months, can he get back?
I think he can. He showed that even in this short period that he's been back, that he is still an absolute champion of this game. And with the, if it was to be the worst case scenario, and fingers crossed it's not, I'd have no hesitation in saying that in 12 months, he would come back and still be a great player.
Yeah, well, up until the shoulder, he's been relatively injury-free.
It's just going to put his recovery processes back into the focus again, because you hear that he doesn't like taking the tablets, the anti-inflammatories, all that sort of stuff. He likes to do his own rehabilitation, which put him behind pace with the shoulder. So I think the club would like to see him follow their plan for his rehabilitation, but we'll see what happens with that.
Well, good luck if he doesn't take a painkiller after having if he has an ACL. Might be just feeling it for a few days. Anyway, that's what you get if you don't take a tablet or two. Now, Paddy Ryder last night, I saw the game, kick 4 goals, kick 3 in the last quarter. Let's first of all have a listen to what James Hird had to say about his former ruckman.
I thought Paddy was held pretty well for 3 quarters. I thought he was lucky. Certainly the free kick that he kicked the goal with Steinberg on him, you know, was a lucky free kick, kicked one off the ground. I think he had 4 possessions at three-quarter time.
I agree with one thing that Hurdy said. 4 possessions at three-quarter time was right. And had little impact on the game. However, when you step up as a big man and you win the game off your own boot in the last quarter, I think you deserve some credit.
Absolutely. To kick 4 goals in the last quarter, that's unbelievable.
3 goals in the last quarter.
Sorry, 3 goals in the last quarter. Yeah, I don't like hearing a coach say that you're lucky, because you're not lucky. You make your own luck. And at the end of the day, he gets the free kick, he goes back, he's still got to kick the goal. Jay, and he did that. So I think that that was being... It's a little bit disrespectful to Paddy by saying that.
It just sounded like a dig at a player that he didn't want to lose.
A sore loser? Is that what hurt you?
A little bit of that about it.
I don't understand that from James. I'm with you on that, Duck. I think at a time at this point in James' career where everyone's up against him, I think in that situation, if he had his time over again, he'd just show a bit more class and respect, as you said, for Paddy Ryder. Look, no one at Essendon wanted to see him leave, but I just think in that situation where we see guys missing clutch set shots, as Dustin Martin, Trent Cotchin did, Paddy goes back with all the weight of the world on him. All the pressure goes back and nails it, snaps that one from 45 metres out earlier. Desperate lunge on the goal line to poke one through from the goal square off the ground. Yeah, he might have got a bit of luck, but I just think in that situation, James, just tip your hat to Paddy and move on. Say, well done, Steinberg, for doing a good job on him for the first three quarters.
There's clearly lingering emotions there for James, because Paddy used what occurred in those 2 years with the program that was going on to get out of the club. So there would be lingering feelings there with James and why Paddy left. So, you know, I guess in a way that's understandable, but it probably shouldn't be made public.
What about the boos last? That was as loud as I've heard it, BT.
But hello. Hello. When you go from one club to another, that is what happens. You know, I had people talking in my ears last night, talking to me last night during the coverage about, did you hear the boos for Paddy? Oh, yeah, I did hear the boos for Paddy. And guess what? That happens if you change clubs. And the supporters are within their rights to boo. It was like, it was being told to me, like, that shouldn't happen. That's unsportsman. No, if you transfer from one club to another, and those supporters that you've left behind, they're shitty on you. They're allowed to boo, and they should boo. And I wish it was louder, because it's fantastic. And I, as a player in Paddy Ryder's situation, would have reacted to that and kicked 10.
Well, I reckon it rattled him for the first three quarters. It looked he looked uncomfortable. I reckon he was just a bit in his shell.
See, this is the trouble with you, Jay. You're just out of nappies, and you're coming along, and you've never had anything bad happen in your life, and you've never been pushed over at school because you're not allowed to play sport at school anymore, and you're only allowed to play hopscotch, and you're not allowed to play footy. You're not allowed to go on the monkey bars anymore.
He's
because you're breaking your collarbone. You're not allowed to do anything. And this is the attitude of people like yourself, JC.
You're up today. I'll tell you what Brendan Goddard did. That's it.
Get in the naughty corner. Teacher would have kicked me ass all the way to the naughty corner.
Very good. Brendan Goddard gave Paddy Ryder a fearful spray last night. And Mark Bagley as well. I think at one stage, Dyson Heppel had to be dragged. Dyson Heppel had to drag Brendan Goddard away. So there was a lot of venom out there on the field. They certainly didn't want to.
Now, it was made a point last night, Lingy in the Channel 7 coverage last night mentioned that he thought that the coaches had words with Brendan Goddard during the week at training based on his actions perhaps the week before and in the weeks preceding that. You know, about telling players and
demonstrative behaviour.
Yeah, towards his own players because of his own hype and enthusiasm to want to be involved. That can be construed differently. And if you watched last night, the coaches at every break, Mark Harvey come up to him, absolutely giving it to him, and they're really checking and making sure he's saying the right thing. Dyson Heppel, for the first time I've ever seen, stood up to him in the incident you talk about last night and said, hang on a minute. No, you can't be saying that, even if that is to one of our own players. So it is interesting that they're taking a hard line on that by the looks.
Yeah, they've been probably not a bad call. Yep. BJ's a passionate man. He's had those issues in the past, hasn't he?
Bombers weren't disgraced by any means last night. They played pretty reasonable football at times, or in the game for most of the game. Just want to ask you, though, if you were looking at the Bombers last night and you're looking at the Blues from Friday night, which team is going to see that glimmer of light flickering at the end of the tunnel first? These are both power clubs of the AFL. They both had enormous membership when they were up and running. I think they've won 16 premierships each, haven't they? They lead the number of premierships in the competition. Yet, which one are we going to see first? Because they are both in big holes at the moment.
Yeah, pretty easy for me. The Bombers.
Why?
By a long way. I just think they're a better team. I think their talent runs deeper. And I think that was proven by the game last night. I think, you know, they're up against Port Adelaide, who are a quality opposition. And
if you look at their
unlucky
spine,
to lose that game.
If you look at Hooker, Hurley, Watson, Carlisle and
Danaher.
Well, Carlisle is more than likely
he's out. He's
not,
gone.
Not going to be there. But say Watson, put Heppel where you had Watson, and you're right, if Carlisle does stay or go, that's a pretty good spine, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
it
what
is.
You're alluding to.
And for me, I saw real green shoots. I saw Langford, mobile, classy, 190 centimetre tall, saw Laverty kick a nice goal. I saw Nick O'Brien, 32 possessions, and Alex Brown kick that goal last quarter. So we saw this young talent, which Essendon desperately needs, really emerge last night. It's a shame that probably Hurdy made that comment because it took the focus off. Otherwise, these young Essendon players, you had a pretty good night last night. They kicked 17 goals for only the second time this season. Yeah, they leaked a few defensively, but Hooker's playing forward, so maybe it's a bit unfortunate that Hurdy's focus, that controversial comment, took the focus off what was otherwise pretty encouraging from the Essendon young guys.
I said it 2 weeks ago. I said that the way forward for the Bombers is just to play the kids because I think the kids that Essendon have at their disposal are better. Maybe not better, but are showing more promise. I think there's more upside compared to some of the young talent with the Blues.
And it's not right. It's a really shallow draft this year, guys. So Carlton want to go and have four picks in the top 30 or whatever, hard yards in the draft, trying to rebuild a side this year.
We're going to talk about the state of the game a little bit later on, but just in the play yard there the other day, Jay, where you're not allowed to play hopscotch and all that sort of stuff now. I just want to give you some of the things you're not allowed to do in footy anymore.
Righto.
As we go to the break here, as we just build
it
up.
So is this according to you or this is according to the governor?
No tackles too hard. No bumps. It hurts. No positions. No instinctive play. No head over the ball, no going to ground, no personality, no torpedoes, no contested marking, no kicking to a contest, no kicking two goals in a row or you get dragged, no oranges at three-quarter time, no beer after the game, no clinics done by players at schools, no training longer than 40 minutes, no more single coach's address, go to your forward line coach, go to your back line coach, no tough players, no coaches abusing players, no long stops in your boots anymore. And what was the last one? No long sleeves. Got to wear short sleeves. So they're all the things you can't do in football now. Duck, you're never out of the news. You made a comment in regard to Sam Mitchell saying he basically couldn't get a game any other club in the competition. I thought you were wrong. I thought you were clearly wrong. What did you mean?
No, it's funny you say that, BT. I got home yesterday morning after finishing radio and I was... Must have been moping around the house, and Steph looked at me and she said, "What's going on? What's in your mind?" She's often asked me that, though. she said, "What's going? Something's wrong." And I said, "No, nothing." She said, "Tell me what's going on." And I said, "Well, look, a little bit's happened last night. I made these." She said, "Well, what did you say?" And I said, "Well, what I said and what I was trying to say probably didn't come out exactly how I would have wanted, and I'm sure Sam won't mind me saying this." And she said, "Well, okay, what'd you say?" I explained to her. She said, "Ring him." She said, "Ring him." And I said, "What? Ring Sam?" She goes, "Ring him." She said, "I know you. It'll make you feel better, and I'm sure that he'd appreciate the call." So I'm sure he wouldn't mind. But I rang Sam, and explained to Sam what I was trying to portray on Friday night and try to get
across. How was his reaction?
Sam was rapt that I called him and heard the comments. He'd actually. So someone had said...
Well, that's not unusual. I mean, most people would be rapt if they got a call from the kid.
But he heard the comments, and then he said what he read in the paper the next day. So Glenn McFarlane, Herald Sun, wrote about it yesterday, which I read. And it's funny, because unless you take it in context of what I was trying to say, BT, he said what he read and what he heard were completely different things. He said what I said on Friday night, and he understood what I was trying to say, he said he didn't have a problem with.
Right.
He did say that when you're winning by, you know, 100 big margins, he said his pressure probably wasn't where it should have been. I explained to him that that was the area of the game that I thought that, you know, it wasn't his greatest strength. He said he agreed with that. He said, "But I'm pretty sure, Duck, I'd get a game."
So do you withdraw that part?
No, well, I got that wrong. What I was trying to say is, would he be under, without having the pressure side of his game, Swatter, would it put him at his age under more pressure at a lower club?
Because, see, you could pull any of those Hawthorn players out and put them in the Carlton team and they'd struggle.
And the other comment, and look, it made a boring game a little bit interesting, I must say. But and he made a good point yesterday in our conversation. And the simple facts are that all of those players, all of the older players in that side, look better because they're a great side. Mm. They're two premierships, possibly a third in a row. So of course they look better.
Yep.
And it's an obvious thing to say. I have the utmost, and this is the one thing that hasn't been reported, I have the utmost respect. He's an absolute champion and still is a champion of the game. I was purely pointing out a part of his game that wasn't great.
But his speed for me, we know he's not fleet-footed and fast, and we know that, and that's what you're alluding to. Yep. His speed is his mind and his decision-making.
What was funny about it, BT, is I made those comments, and it wasn't you know, planned. It was just off the cuff, saw him in and around a stoppage. But about, 30 minutes prior to that in the first quarter, he took a mark at centre-half back, and while he was on his knees, hit Burgoyne in the middle of the ground to go straight up through the corridor, and it was that quick thing. And I'm going, that's why he's the best, one of the best players in the competition, and that's why he's the best decision-maker in the competition.
And so he's the best both-sided player in the competition.
Well, without question. He's a marvellous player. I probably didn't execute my delivery the way I would have liked on Friday
Paddy
night.
Paddy Dangerfield enjoyed some of your commentary too, Duck. Paddy posted a couple of tweets off the back of some
Paddy,
of things.
Paddy, that, Paddy's what did he little, say? Little miss. Steve Smith. This Steve Smith is an average cricketer and wouldn't make England's Test side.
Hashtag things the duck says.
Hey, by the way,
what about this one? Bronwyn Bishop's helicopter flight from Melbourne to Geelong was taxpayers' money well spent.
Hey, by the way, that trended. I don't know what trend means, but that
means it's pretty popular.
It means it's pretty popular. That trended on Friday night, BT. Yeah.
When did you know that it hit the fan, Duck? At what point did you sort of start to think?
Well, I don't go anywhere near my phone, BT, when I'm doing TV, unlike here, because we like to look at Twitter and what's going on. Oh, but I did think after I made a few comments, I just thought, I'll just have a little look at how my Twitter's going.
How was it?
Well, it blew up. The response has been incredible. The other thing that Sam Mitchell said to me yesterday, he goes, and you know what, it was great to have a chat to him, and I'm rapt that I called, so thanks, Stephanie. So it was her idea, Sam, but I invariably did it. But the thing that I loved about what he said, he's very honest, PT. He's so honest where he's at. He said, 3 weeks ago, Duck, he goes, I was getting bagged by everyone for doing whatever. He goes, now all of a sudden after Friday night, they're all loving me again. No, look, 3 weeks' time, they won't be liking me again.
I reckon he's a gun. But, you know, like we saw that James Hurd wouldn't give Ryder a bit of a rap and say, well done. But he just going to withdraw a little bit and just say, you know.
Surely, haven't I explained?
Yeah, you have. But just I want to hear it in one sentence.
What?
I, Wayne Carey, do I solemnly...
No.
That Sam is a good player.
I never said he wasn't a good player. I thought he's an absolute champion. I didn't execute my delivery on what I was trying to put across on Friday night.
In your defence, Duck, the numbers say that Sammy's ranked eighth in terms of his midfield pressure. So you got a point in saying he's not the most defensive player in the Hawthorn.
But Sam will admit that himself, and he admitted that yesterday. So
each player in the Hawthorn side brings different things, and that's why they're so good, because they do them so well.
True.
Time now for Tell Me Something I Don't Already Know. And interestingly enough, a segment where you get told something you don't know. Jay-Z, what do you got for us?
Hey, Steve Motlop has been on fire over the past couple of weeks for Geelong. Another 31 possessions yesterday, 11 tackles before that. I can tell you that North Melbourne, if it misses out on Adam Treloar, as we expect, he will go to Collingwood, we believe, that North Melbourne will have a serious crack at landing Steve Motlop.
And Jay-Z,
The Cats will go to all lengths to keep him.
Just want to tell me something I don't know. I just want to get this straight. Like, these have got to be things that are real, not rumours about player, swapping clubs and all this sort of...
What we'll do is just bookmark this one now.
Can you pracy down what you just said?
Was a question mark over Wells.
What are you saying?
That North Melbourne is a massive chance to get Steve Motlop on a half-forward flank for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a good one.
Well, Daniel Wells is a question mark over his career, right? Well, they need the outside speed and polish. That's exactly what they're lacking.
So you're Boomer putting two Harvey's and two together, or is that a fact?
No, it's an absolute fact, Brian.
Right. Okay. Well, that's all right then.
That's better.
Might tell you something that you didn't know last week was that there was going to be a big name
quarterback.
No, not a quarterback.
A big name NFL
player.
A big name NFL player
coming out. And this isn't, he's not bought out by the AFL. No, I've got
coming to the grand final?
No, he'll be in and around the grand final weekend after the Super Bowl. As you know, BT, Channel 7 have the NFL now as well. But I've, a little whisper, just to follow up on last week, Emmett Smith. Yeah. And there might be a couple of others. Now, you know who Emmett Smith is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's coming.
Apparently he's coming, yes. Now, tell you something I don't know. Yep. So, Tuesday night, Mike Sheehan, who doesn't do too much these days, the absolute best, the GOAT, the greatest of all time, Jay-Z, is actually coming out, BT, with his best team of the 60s. This is the last time, by the way. It's Mike's last list, so to speak. So the best team of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and 2000s. So he's going to teams, captains of those decades and coaches of those decades. Going to be announced on Tuesday night, Swatter.
In a big Herald Sun Gala event, of which Jay-Z hasn't been invited to and he knows nothing about it. Jay-Z, do you know anything about this Herald Sun big gala presentation of these teams?
Well, Duck is ahead of the curve on most things. So,
I only found out, BT, because they want me to go for some reason.
Duck just hoping to muscle into the 80s, 90s and 2000s. Just in the three decades.
I only played four games in the 80s, but I'm probably...
Swatter?
Brian, I had to work very hard for this because we weren't sure whether there was actually a speaking part. But I'm pleased to say that there is a movie premiere tonight, which I'm led to believe we're all going.
Oh, is that tonight?
Tonight. We're all going. We've got to wrap it up very quickly after the game, Duck.
Hang on.
But I just want... I've managed... Don't ask me how, but I've managed to get a speaking part. It's the last cap to Darwin.
You need
it's
to see the pictures with
no,
the speaking
No, shut up,
part.
Brian.
It doesn't make sense.
It is going to be a rating success. This is our man, Brian Bristol-Taylor, with a speaking role in Last Cap to Darwin.
Go, guys!
Who are you?
Tilly Johnson, sir.
Tilly from Oodnadatta? You been training, Tilly?
No, but I wanna.
Sorry, it's too late. Season starts in 3 weeks. I've got no time for bullshit. Come back next year and do a pre-season with us.
That's not how you talk.
I know. It's embarrassing.
You don't talk like that.
I know. I don't talk like that.
The last captain, Darwin.
But the director said talk like that, so I did.
Brian.
Shocking.
I've got to... so that premiere
anyway,
is tonight.
Anyway, it's not covered under ratings. It's covered under the Oscars. it's a little bit past ratings, that one. But anyway, that's the premiere tonight, of which none of you guys are coming,
no,
I'm glad
to
say.
No invitations.
So I'm very happy about
it's that. It's that bad, is it?
Can you just say something in that? Can you give us the movie voice again?
Tilly from Oodnadatta.
So have you got anything, BT? Or?
Yeah.
No.
I haven't
got anything today. We're going to take a break on 3LW Football. Travis Cloak. Very, very short. Oh, did I say that? Swatter, can you throw to the ad break, please? I've had enough.
He's done it.
Stick it up, you cracker. Stick it up, you fat rat.
He's out.
Just quickly, Jay-Z, Jesse Hogan. Is he... surely he's a contender to win the Rising Star, is he not?
Well, at the moment, everyone would say that Cripps is the leading favourite. He's been sensational in the Carlton midfield. But you just think that he might be slowing, and Jesse Hogan is the man who is coming with a fast bullet. And what we've done, we just had a look at some numbers, BT, and how he compares to some of the other great forwards of the game after 13 games. That's how many Hogan's played. So he's kicked 28 goals and averaged 7 marks from 13 games, Jesse Hogan. That compares to Nick Riewoldt, 10 goals, Josh Kennedy, 6, Jared Ruffhead, 6, and Tom Hawkins, 21 goals. And then average marks, so Jesse Hogan's averaged 7, Riewoldt, 7, Kennedy, 3, Ruffhead, 3, Hawkins, 4. So basically at the moment after 13 games, Jesse Hogan has got it above the absolute best key forwards in the game at the moment. So I think Melbourne's got some kilo today. He could have kicked a few more. I think we're going to see a much tighter finish in the Rising Star race than what it is perceived possibly to be at the moment. Who do you think? Do you think Cripps at the moment, Duck?
No, I actually think Hogan, to be honest, and I agree with what you said. Never been a key forward win it. Riewoldt won it, but he wasn't playing key forward when he won the Rising Star. So it'd be a first. Mm-hmm. He has missed a few games. Mm-hmm. History tells you that you have to play every game to win it. I think there's only one player ever to win it that missed three games, and it was, I can't think of the player who it is now, but missed three games and won it. So, you're right. I totally agree with everything you said there, Jay-Z. He is an absolute star, and what he has done this year has been quite incredible. We obviously watched him play last week. Just needs to improve his
kicking.
His kicking and his run-up to goal. But once he gets that right, he's an absolute beauty.
Hey, listen, guys, state of the game. And I know that Mark Evans is going to be going to the commission with recommendations of how it should look and what we need to do to our games. I think I'm different to others. I think people are looking forward and they're always looking to make a rule change to make the game better. I think go back. Look back to where it went wrong and make your adjustments from there. First of all, to do that, you've got to say, what was the best era of football from an aesthetic point of view, from an athletic point of view, and all of the ingredients that make up good football? And I think it was mid-80s to 2000, roughly in that period, give or take a few years at the end of that period. I reckon that was the best period of football that I've seen. As someone that's been watching footy for four decades, I reckon that is the best period of football. That's what our game should look like, with a little bit of absolutely everything. So it is interesting when you look at that, and you look at when the four interchange were introduced. In 1998, the four interchange came into play. Now listen, I reckon what you should do is go backwards to that, roughly to that period, and that period when the game looked good, and just simply readjust by saying, okay, let's go. If we want to leave the four interchange, fine. Or if you want to take it back to two players on the bench, do that. Take it back to two players on the bench. Take it back to 10 rotations per quarter. And that fixes the whole thing. So don't go forward making new rules that the coaches will exploit. Go backwards. Remove the number of interchange. Remove the number of players on the bench if that's what you want to do. It's as simple as that for me. Don't continually be making rules. The other thing that came into our game is that it became professional. And it became professional with players and coaches. So the coaches have exploited it. So give them a bench of two players. They can't exploit that. The players, guess what? If you've got two on the bench, then all of a sudden the full forward has to play at full forward. And he has to play an opponent. You know, the forwards have got to play at either end. They won't be coming off the ground for a rest. They have to play their positions. And that's what we want. We don't want zones. We don't want the 50 line saying, oh, you've got to have two players inside 50 and that, JC. So rather than have new rules for that, just simply go back and say, okay, when did it work best and how did it work? And it did that by stopping the rotations.
So what you want essentially is players to be more fatigued so they can't do the ballistic running.
Absolutely. But we need them contesting. We need one-on-one contests. And I think, don't go forward making new rules. That's the other thing because, you know, the players, not so the players, but the coaches are going to exploit them. I mean, they're professional these days and they're that good at what they do. Hey, joining us in the Triple M box here right now, Trav Cloak has been good enough to give us a couple of times. Trav, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
No problems. Thanks for having me.
How's the calf going?
Yeah, coming along nice. I'm going for a bit of a trot tomorrow, a bit of a run. Okay. So all goes well tomorrow. I'm eyeing off the Carlton game in 2 weeks. So fingers crossed it comes good tomorrow and everything works out. But, obviously it's frustrating sitting watching from the sidelines at the moment.
Is it the actual calf or the soleus?
A bit of both. It's obviously right around where the tendon is, so that's why they're a little bit cautious at the moment. But I'm walking uninhibited. I'm pain-free, which is good. And they said that's the greatest thing after being a week on the sidelines. So I guess it's one of those things. I wait and see how I go after running, then obviously trying to sprint. I guess one thing going in my favour is I'm not the quickest bloke getting around, so I don't have to push too hard to tick that box, which is great.
Without you, Travis, how's the Collingwood forward structure going to function today?
Oh, obviously a lot quicker. They're going to be a lot sharper on the floor than what they normally are. But we brought in Darcy Moore today for another shot up forward. And I guess he's the future of the footy club. We're looking forward to seeing what he can bring. And it puts a little bit more responsibility also on Jesse White as well. But the players around him. And we're looking forward to seeing how it operates. But I'm positive they're going to kick the goals that we need.
What about Paddy Kay? He gets his chance today. Probably football future at stake, I believe. How's he travelling? What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I guess he only just missed out a little bit because he was a little bit sore. All in all, he would have probably come in, but he just pulled up a little bit sore during the week. And he's playing fantastic foot in the VFL, and I'd like to see him out there playing seniors very soon because he's an exciting player. And I guess he's one of those players that can turn the game off his own boot. We don't have many of those players at the club, and he's definitely one of them. And I think he's still got a bright future in the AFL, and then hopefully that's at Collingwood.
When you're playing, Trav, you're the general up there. You're the captain of that forward line. You're the leader there. Jesse White, and we talk a lot about his IQ, BT, and how smart he is. I'm talking footy IQ, how smart he is on the footy field. Do at times, and I'm sure you practice this at training, do at times when he doesn't lead to the right spots and his opponent's allowed to lay off and then, for instance, double team you, is that something that you work on at training and week to week, and is that an area that they'll have to get right today? Because you can't allow players to play off, because when you're playing sides like Hawthorn, that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, I guess, and I've heard your comments over the last few weeks about it, and there is some truth to it, and that's the way it is. And I guess you're probably the best to know about that. You played that role, and it's changed a little bit now, but it's definitely been an area of Jesse's game he's been working on. But I guess he's this big tall guy, but we play him always as a small running player, so it is a little bit different. But you do need to push into the right places. So just to, even if you're not going to get the ball, it draws your opponent. It makes them not sit off. And I guess against the quality team, especially Hawthorn, they almost don't follow you. They back themselves in to read the ball better than anyone. And I guess they do. And you'd like to think we as forwards can be a bit more proactive, and we can dictate our defender where we want them. But I guess in some cases you do get lost and caught up in traffic and it doesn't work. But it's an area of our game that all of us as forwards in our side are working on, and also working on that connection we have together.
Hey, Trev, does Jesse doubt himself as a football player because he got his hands to, and I don't want this to be critical, he got his hands to a lot of opportunities last week of taking the mark, and he either looks like a player who's down on confidence or he's a player who still questions where he fits in the whole scheme of AFL footy.
Yeah, I guess I was sitting there last week on the bench watching, and he obviously, I think it was a positive step in the right direction for him. Sometimes he probably hasn't launched and jumped at those balls. He's kind of waited for them or been bodied out. So it was a step in the right direction, but once you get your hands to him, you've got to hold him. And hopefully that's the next step today. He's still jumping at him and you can take him today. So we've seen in glimpses that he's a very good footballer. I love playing alongside him. He helps me out a lot. We can bounce a few ideas off one another while we're out there. But, yeah, definitely, it's just that little bit of his game at the moment. He just needs to clunk one early on to just get that confidence going and almost just go into the game and forget what everyone thinks and expectations on yourself. Just play the game of footy. We're all here to play because we love the game, and we're all here because we can actually play the game in some form. So you just got to go out there and be confident and just, not fingers crossed, but play with a little bit of luck. Hopefully a few things go your way and it builds that confidence for you.
Trav, is it right that Ben Reid's been doing some ballet dancing training?
Oh,
how
come
much
on, Jay-Z.
How much do you hang it on him for that?
Yes, it's true, actually. He's been doing it all year. We thought it, or not me personally, but the powers to be, I thought it would help him with these calf things. And I don't know if it has or not. He's had a few along the way still. But he's so far today, he's kicked a couple of goals already and taken some marks. So it's working for him today. But, yeah, we give it to him. Don't worry about that. Any chance to give Rudy a bit of flack, we do. And definitely, since she's been around. And she's working with a few of the boys. It's not just him.
What's her name?
I'm not too sure. Last time,
last time a Collingwood player who will remain unnamed had a sort of one of these Tyler Coates that ended up in a romance. it was a very full-on yoga-style operation. Trav, we appreciate your time. Good luck when you do get back in a couple of weeks, and appreciate you joining us here today.
No problems. Have fun in the Sabo, guys.
Good on you. Travis Cloak could join us. Jake, the push-up king, is about to join us as well, so we might try and get him as well. Wouldn't to have a chat with him because he's gone down, has he? Okay, so we'll speak to him very, very shortly about, I'm hearing a bit of a challenge coming up grand final day in terms
of
push-ups.
Challenge?
Duck and the push-up king. I'm hearing something along those lines. Just want to check it out and find out whether it's true. Swatter, so yep. Trav was in good mood.
He was, very happy.
Up and about. That player, that Collingwood player that had the romance to the yoga instructor. That went on for some years, and he shall remain nameless. Boy, was it spicy. And it just was good. And
he won't keep going.
That's
keep
it.
Going.
Throw to the going.
Shut up. The footies on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.